Hey everyone, Zach with another New York Comic Con podcast coming at you. This one is with the pretty much the entire cast of Da Vinci's Demons, which is on Stars. Season 2 is going to start in 2014. And so you'll get to hear, first up, you'll hear from Tom Riley, who plays Da Vinci, and David Goyer, who created the show, or one of the creators of the show. And then Laura Haddock and Greg Chillen. Laura plays Acretia, and Greg plays Zoraster. And then last ones are Blake Ritson, who plays Count Riario, and Carolina Guerra, who's playing a new character coming up on the show in the second season. So, yeah, check all those out. A lot of good info about what's coming up in the next season. Some fun Da Vinci facts and some other stuff going on. So, check these out, and then, for more, go to everythingaction.com, or facebook.com/everythingaction, twitter.com/evaction, everythingaction.tumblr.com, and contact@everythingaction.com is the email.
Well, season two of, Da Vinci's Demons, we hear it's going global. What can you tell us about the upcoming season?
Bigger, better, longer.
It is longer, it's two episodes long.
You start, because I'm opening my...
We're basically expanding the show to take in a journey for almost all the characters, both geographically and emotionally. So all the characters are going to be thrown together in...
Different combinations.
Yeah, different combinations you wouldn't expect, different dynamics. People that you haven't necessarily seen working together will have to work together, and not just in Italy.
Yeah. It's not just restricted to Florence and Rome. We'll be spending a lot of time in Naples, a lot of time in South America, Genoa. We're not supposed to say, but...
Don't.
Another place. another country, not South America or... or Italy, not part of Europe, which is kind of fun.
Great. So maybe Asia?
Maybe the gateway to Asia.
Middle East.
But Asia is on our, it's funny, I read recently about that document, that early document from Lost that leaked on the web, where it was like, it will not be a serialized show and we will solve every mystery. And we kind of did something similar on this show when we were getting it going, where we said, don't worry, it's all going to be based in Florence. And my intention was that it was kind of a road show from, it's a quest show.
Right.
So my intention was always that we were going to be going all over the world. And, so we had a similar document in which I just lied about everything. But now Stars is okay.
Tom, is there any pressure in portraying one of the greatest minds who's ever lived in the history of the world? Does that ever weigh on you?
I mean, when you put it like that, yeah, there's yes. I mean, it's a strange double-edged sword, because there's two versions of Leonardo. There's a version that in the research I did about how he behaved in his 20s and what he was like, is a version that isn't really known. Mm-hmm. And there is the version that everyone thinks, and the expectations everyone has. Mm-hmm. And so you try and do justice to the version of him that the research showed, and I read a really interesting letter he wrote to a duke in a separate town outside of Florence that was the most arrogant, a borderline unpleasant letter
right.
I'd ever read.
Right.
And but the thing is, everyone has this man in their mind who is far wiser and thoughtful and philosophical, and that is the man we're heading to.
Mm-hmm.
It's just going to take some time to get there. So it's holding your water. That's the pressure. That's what I feel. It's holding back on where he's going to be in favour of the more sort of cocky version. It can be a hard decision, but
also I think, and maybe you said this while I was grabbing something to blow my nose, but I think that our general conception of him is this is sort of Merlin-like, you know, bearded figure, and that's just really it. I mean, he may have been like that at the end of his life, but if you read the accounts of his younger life, he was quite funny. I mean, he, by our standards, they're not particularly funny, but he published a book of jokes. I'm not kidding. And he liked to do pranks and things like that, and he was a vegetarian. He was an odd guy.
Right.
And
I just read a thing that isn't in the show, but it should be, season three, that he used to inflate balloons in the corner of rooms just as a part of an experiment so no one could get out. So they'd be going, what is this? And then they'd realize it was the
They were bladders.
They would pig's bladders.
Yeah, he would literally inflate these pig's bladders so that they would get like to the size of 15 feet in diameter. Although
that's not the version of Leonardo people have in their heads.
But also that we were in Florence last year when we were premiering the show, and we were doing this historical tour, and they said at one point, which I loved, and this is the sitcom version of the show, that Leonardo da Vinci and Botticelli had a restaurant on the Ponte Vecchio briefly that they ran, and it wasn't successful because they were more concerned with like the presentation of the food than they were with
it's the two broke girls version of
it. Yeah. but that was true, and I just love that.
Yeah.
Do you see for Tom, do you see any of the, we know it's an actual person that lived in, you know, Renaissance. Do you see any of that Da Vinci stuff from your research coming into your own life, and anything you're putting from your life into that?
It's as I said on the panel yesterday, it's very difficult to connect with the greatest mind in human history in a way that will ever do justice to that side of it. But I always believe that he didn't see his intellect as something that was all-consuming. It was a necessary side dish to the rest of it. So it's really the more human moments and how he connects to the people around him and the relationships he had. That was the stuff that I could bring from my life into his. That's striving for perfection, the occasional self-loathing and the never believing you've done well enough, and always trying to never being able to concentrate on one thing at a time and leaping from subject to subject. That stuff is universal, and that's the stuff I tried to bring to him, and then the stuff I found out about him that came into my own life. For example, something that I have to stop doing because it's something that now comes very naturally is I read a lot that he was somewhere on the autism spectrum. A lot of people speculated that because a part of his mind may have been opened. I have autistic relatives. I wanted to spend a bit of time with them and see what kind of things they had. And one of them has a finger twitch, a very slight, when he's working something out. And then I watched documentaries.
Is that where that came from?
Yeah, and I watched documentaries since it about someone, another autistic young man, who, whenever he was working something out, would do it with an imaginary abacus in the air. That was originally just mathematical problems, and then it became everything. And I just thought that's a very interesting thing. He did it like this, which would have got in the way of every shot. But that I find, I've done it in the show, and now every once in a while when I'm working something out, I feel a finger twitch.
Sometimes I had to tell you in the first season to calm the, I called it the finger twiddling.
Yeah.
Calm it down.
David, you're known for writing very dark, gothic material a lot of the time, and this show obviously has dark moments, but also has a lot of lightness to it. Was that a conscious decision on your part to kind of branch out from that, or is it just where the source material took you?
I mean, both. I'm told, although now it's going to sound really stupid in this interview, I'm told by people around me that I can be quite funny, but it was fun to write stuff that had some lightness and had some humor in it, and I mean, things get very grim and portentous in Gotham City and Metropolis, and certainly with Blade, he's a bowl of laughs. Hollywood likes to pigeonhole you. So in the feature world, it's like, you know, write this grim, dark, gritty hero thing, and it was an opportunity. I'd never done anything historical before, so it was an opportunity to branch out.
Great.
So when we talked to you last year, obviously the show hadn't come out yet, but so what kind of fan reaction have you been getting?
pretty across the board amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not bullshitting you.
No, I know. That was the biggest surprise, actually, is that the people who stuck with the show, particularly people who stuck with the show to the end, loved it. I mean, I think it's the same with all premium cable shows generally. It takes a few episodes to get them, and once you're there, you invest heavily, and that seems to be, I mean, just the nicest stuff said, people being absolutely lovely. It seems to you.
Yeah, also, I think people at the beginning were wrestling with the, I had always called it a historical fantasy, and so some critics took us to task for, you know, taking choices that weren't historically accurate, whereas I had said from the beginning,
that's what we're doing.
But now
it doesn't matter how many times you say it.
I know. But now that we've done that, everybody's fine with it, and now they're saying, oh, well what other characters like Dracula can he meet and whatnot? So we've gotten over that hump. And people, you know, it's found its audience, and it's built, and it did quite well for Starz, and now we're talking about season 3, so it's cool.
Was that, like, Starz basically did it before, right, with Spartacus? That kind of, like, they did this historical sort of fiction. It was, like, historical fiction and then,
yeah,
like, historical, like, embellishing things. So,
I mean, it's...
It seems like Starz...
People
like
do it in comic books all the time, or even in novels and things like that. It's just that I think it's relatively new for television to do something like that.
So with that, last question. So with that, is there any character you'd like to add to the show that like you couldn't, but it would be funny to have?
I don't think there's anyone you couldn't. the parameters are so wide.
I mean, we had he was only in a walk on the first season, but Torquemada is the leader of the Spanish Inquisition, and this season we're adding. There are a couple others that I can't mention that are kind of surprises near the end of the season, historical figures, but. One that's quite fun is Amerigo Vespucci, America is named after him. And he joins the cast in episode 2.
Episode 2, yeah.
And what was fun, we were reading up about him, is, you know, he's one of these famous explorers that he's up there with Columbus. But you read about him, and they describe him as this kind of shameless promoter, this sort of Sammy Glick character who, you know, maybe wasn't that great an explorer, but just named a lot of shit after himself. And that's kind of our take on him in the show.
Okay, alright.
Oh, that was bad.
Thank you for your time.
Good, how are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
We escaped the coup and came to New York.
Laura, I'll start with you. So, you know, obviously playing real characters has its challenges. In terms of Tom, he has, you know, mountains of research to draw from. I imagine less so for you. How do you approach the character?
I just put all my faith in the scripts, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I just know that, you know, we know this woman existed, we know she was living in Florence at that time, but that's about as far as it goes, so it's a brilliant opportunity for David and I now to just build this character, and we can kind of take her anywhere, so, and it's not, you don't feel suffocated by fact and history, and so we can go to each other and say, well, why don't we take her in this direction, and it's you can, there's an opportunity to say yes, let's do that.
Right.
So yeah, it's good.
Good.
Yeah.
Great. I have one for Laura. Oh, you obviously, to kind of piggyback, you're playing obviously a historical figure. What do you like the most about her, or what do you dislike the most about her when you did the research?
There's so many mysteries with her, so many things that we don't know, I don't know, and you never quite know which string she's gonna, you know, twang next, because...
Twang? No, I like it.
Yeah, she kind of... What I like about her is that she has so many sides to her personality that in any situation she can utilize any of those traits. Her intelligence, her sexuality, her passion, her loyalty. So I like the fact that in different situations she can turn the loyalty card and say, this is what I'm playing today, I'm being loyal to my
Obviously, I think your character is what, like, the most complex,
so
interesting
complex
character, I would say, for me in the season.
Yeah.
I think, like, that's why we're lucky that hopefully, if it just runs and runs, there's just so much depth there.
Yeah.
In season two, it's even more, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's really exciting. I kind of came up with, I kind of feel like this woman, something happened in her life 10 years previously to when you met her in season one, which affected everything about who she is. And I think in that moment, there were two paths. What happened, happened. And I feel like she would have taken the other path if this thing hadn't happened. But she was forced to start living the life that she's living now. And it goes against, actually, who she is. So she's had to learn that. And I think she was very closed and very shut off to emotion and love and all those different things. And what was interesting about season one was meeting Da Vinci. He opened a gate, which meant now she's completely conflicted because she's trying to avenge what happened and being really strong and almost quite, you know, masculine. And then she meets this guy and she's like, oh my God. Yeah, starts thinking with her heart, which is dangerous for her.
Do you think that's going to push the qualities of the kind of femme fatale she is a little bit more in the good path a little bit?
Yeah, like the second season, you see Lucretia put on the trousers and become someone who utilizes her intelligence and her strength more than her sexuality. In season one, she was using that because that was her tool, that was her weapon, whereas now she's left that behind, she's on her own journey and she's having to use other skills. So certainly the femme fatale is still kind of there, but it's been developed and now she's able to be stronger this season.
And also because they go back, you see flashbacks of, see some of the history that drove your characters and the things she had to do.
Yeah, we go back and find out what's made her the woman that she is today, which was really interesting. So we kind of went back sort of 7-8 years.
Greg, could I ask you a question instead of you interviewing her?
Sorry. What? Just my favourite character.
Thanks,
you're my favourite character.
Oh.
Want to swap?
Zoroaster, he's really the voice of reason to Da Vinci, and now with the Book of Leaves coming into play, his quest for the Book of Leaves, because he wants to find out more about his mother. How is that going to complicate your relationship further with him?
Do you know what? In all honesty, very, very early on, I'm sure I'm allowed to say that we're okay to that point.
Dude, don't ask me.
You're allowed to tell us anything you want.
We got
clearance from David.
Don't
last
do
year.
That.
He said you could tell us anything.
That's not true, because I was told that last year, and I did some really
honest. I have a form right here we signed off on.
That's, exactly.
Because of me?
No, not because of you.
I remember last year I was told that there was a form that was sent out to all you guys. You had to sign.
Whatever she said, basically, something happens that just Zoe's done. Like, Zoe doesn't care about the book. I mean, he cares about it, but nowhere near. He doesn't want to risk his life anymore for any crappy book he's never even seen. But something happens really early on. Someone very close to him gets kidnapped, taken away, and he's forced into saying to Leo, "I'm going to come with you until we get someone back. And after that, I'm done." And that happens very, very early on. So then you've got another sort of 9 episodes of kind of going to the new world, being strangers in this incredible place, but also kind of only being the two people that kind of really know each other in these dangerous situations. It's kind of a weird dynamic of being at loggerheads with someone, but having to get on and having to pull together no matter what. It's been really interesting.
You two have an unconditional love for each other.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, because David's so amazing. He's clearly got lots and lots of history between Zoe and Leo. Stuff is alluded to this season, but I know that they're going to go back and we're going to discover just why Zoe follows him around, why he does have this love for him. It's cool, be interesting.
So here you guys are in jeans and leather jackets and stuff like that. What's the challenges in filming a show that's not just a period show, but like such a distinct period of time, you know, with all these crazy costumes and inventions and stuff like that. What's that like?
Yeah, it's awesome because, again, like we didn't put any strict rules on it. So we are playing in the Renaissance era, but there's always an opportunity to break the rules and break the boundaries when it comes to design of character, design of set, design of anything. So, yeah, that we weren't stifled by really strict rules.
Yeah.
And it was, I always think that it's almost like a complete reflection of who Leonardo da Vinci was at our show, because he was living out of his time. He was one of the characters in our show refers to da Vinci as a dreamer. So he could dream up anything, as he does, and it's kind of a nice reflection. We've got this principal character who's this, you know, bohemian artist who's living out of his time, and then the rest of the show kind of follows suit, so we can dream up an idea in a
style. I think, Andy Simmons from last year, our percussion design for it. All the characters almost have a kind of comic book, kind of superhero-esque kind of look. We've all got a very distinguished look. And it's fun. It beats putting on sort of slightly different jeans and a slightly different coloured top.
Yeah.
Feeling like Greg, but feeling a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I'd rather put on a big Zoroaster shoulder pad red jacket.
Yeah, and then you instantly feel like him as well, don't you?
Yeah, it's just more fun. Yeah. It's dress up, you know. We're having fun. It helps sense everything.
Yeah.
Laura, your character this season is going after her real father, while Da Vinci's continuing to go after his mother. Do you see any parallels between those journeys?
Oh, definitely. We are on completely separate journeys. We're not together, but we are together. We both hold each other in each other's hearts all the way through these journeys. And you're right, they both have such similarities with their relationship with their parents. And if the two of them just sat down together, had a cup of tea and said, listen, this is the situation, this is what I've been through and this is what I'm going through and this is what I've had to do, then I think he would be the only person who would understand and say, and not judge her and say, I completely understand, and actually I'm probably the person who could help you and solve this for you and rescue you. So I'm excited for that moment when they come back together and they have an honest conversation about what the two of them have been through in their lives, and not holding secrets back all the time, because they do. They hold secrets back from each other all the time. Ironically, they are probably the only two people, male and female, who could be honest and wouldn't judge.
So that moment is coming in season two where, you know, they are going to sit down and actually have an honest conversation about that stuff.
I don't know. We are certainly, I think the main theme of this year is that we're all just on our own journeys. We never forget each other. We are always in each other's minds, but we are certainly on our own journeys this year.
Even sort of geographically, we're scattered.
Yeah.
There's still a winter twine, but it's,
yeah.
Yeah. Anything else you can tease from the next season?
There's lots and lots of water. We've been in Pinewood Studios underwater tank for too long.
Yes, we got so wrinkly, didn't we?
We were prunes.
Yeah, we were prunes. That was really fun that day.
Yeah, I think this year as well, like, characters who you haven't seen together get thrust together in crazy situations. That's been really fun. Obviously, we all know each other personally, but our characters haven't really got
cross
to
paths, yeah,
yeah. Cross paths.
Yeah, that
so
was.
So that's been fun. So actually getting to work with other people.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Cool.
Thank you.
Your time.
It's never identical. Someone's left their rum on coke on the
table. That was one of you guys. No, you too. one of the talent.
It's like a goblin.
That's
it's like a press
Greg's.
Glass goblin. That's Greg.
Yeah.
There's Ron Moore.
Yeah.
Can we move on? More.
This?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. We don't want to make it look like everyone's drinking.
No, don't knock it over, Jenna.
Oh, yeah. Make it look like I'm drinking.
How you guys doing today?
Really good. Yeah, monstrously well.
Good.
Yeah. Good.
Carolina?
Yes.
Is that how you pronounce it?
Okay. Yeah.
Let's start with you.
You're the first.
All right.
Look at me. Carolina.
Yeah, do I get a fist bump for that?
Yeah, yes.
All right. So, Carolina, we know nothing about your character because you're new.
Yes.
So what can you tell us about your character?
Little.
Of course.
Yeah.
Tell us as little as possible. That didn't come out right. But go.
Ima. That's it.
All right. Great.
Spoiler.
Ima, yeah. Her name is Ima Kama. Uh-huh. She's a high priestess of the Children of the Sun. That's how they call the villagers of the Inca Empire. she wants the Book of Leaves as well. She needs the Book of Leaves. She doesn't want, she needs the Book of Leaves in order to protect her people. White men are coming to their lands, and they, she, I mean, they're all very aware of the threat that they represent. So she wants the Book of Leaves as well, but she needs to team up. So it's that kind of relationship. She needs them, but she's afraid of them. And that's one of the most beautiful things of my character, her capacity of sacrifice, and she, you know, like, she's fearless, just to protect her people. So she is a wonderful, wonderful character to play, and she's going to team up with them.
Great. And Blake, what can you tell us about your character's journey for season two?
It's epic. It's pretty epic. So I think in the first season, we see Riario largely in his comfort zone. He's got all the political and military kind of backing of the Vatican. He's counting captain of the Holy Roman Church. He's basically got an army behind him. And this season, he's, you know, as the in the aftermath of all the turmoil of the Pazzi conspiracy, both Riario and Da Vinci convinced that the Book of Leaves is the answer, that somehow this arcane compendium of forgotten knowledge is the only thing that will kind of settle all this terrible political turmoil. So I'm launched off in this race across the Atlantic to the New World, and I'm so out of my comfort zone, Riario, this year. So he is, I mean, it's almost like the trials of Job. He's pushed to absolute breaking point physically and mentally and spiritually. He's, we really glimpse into the darkest recesses of his soul. There's a new emotional rawness, there's a new ferocity, there's a new amorous side, which is lovely.
Yeah.
But we it's a big old journey. And there are a few flashbacks where we begin to fill in some of the backstories, specifically with Lucretia, that are kind of hinted at darkly in the first series. It's a big old journey. I think for a lot of characters this season, they're really pushed to breaking point. It's one of the defining features of this series, I think. This time around, is everyone is just pushed beyond measure, and it's fun. And new alliances, you know, what you're talking about, characters you don't expect to team up are forced into these kind of grudging, queasy alliances. So Riario and Da Vinci, for example, are forced to team up this year, and you never know how much they're playing one another, and it's, you know, the odd couple. Right. You wouldn't expect them to get on, and they're ideologically, they're so diametrically opposed, but they are forced to coexist and to rely on one another, and it takes both characters to very interesting and unexpected places.
And that's also what happens between, like, the New World and them.
Right.
It's that same relationship.
Yeah. Right.
It's amazing.
Is the Book of Leaves is going to be what kind of brings you back into conflict a little bit?
Well, in a way, I mean, for both of us, I think the Book of Leaves is the Holy Grail. This is the artifact. Whoever can lay their mitts on this will effectively be able to rule Italy, if not the world. So it's, you know, it's a big prize, and both Da Vinci and Riario are after it. What they will do with it when they get to it is probably entirely different, but there are various moments where they are at least forged on the same quest together, and I think they're thinking, we'll decide later what happens with the Book of Leaves, but in those moments they are forced to kind of coexist.
Well, you said amorous side, is that...
We can't talk.
Who knows?
We can't say.
Oh. I wonder, perhaps you were paired because of this.
Who knows?
Who knows?
Interesting. Or maybe it's me in the bottle.
David earlier said you guys could tell us anything that you wanted to.
I've actually got the copy of all the scripts.
Great. Carolina, you have obviously a large background in Spanish television.
Yes.
And now you're coming on to an English language production. What are the differences in you know, this show with what you've done in the past?
Oh, everything.
Yeah.
All about it. Well, of course, language. I never thought my first, like, international TV production would be in Europe. You know, you'd think it would be like in the States.
Right.
But it was in Europe, so that was very surprising. And also the fact that it's like a historical, you know, place production. That makes the story, you know, like, spin around. It's been amazing. It's been amazing. I've learned so much about everything. I had to talk English in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
I had to talk Quechua. So it's like a lot of new things, but it's been one of the most amazing experiences ever. Like, how often does a person has this first chance, like, an and the David Coyer production, you know, like, yeah. You can't get luckier than that. So I feel like very blessed, very lucky, and you know, I had so much support from every single person, from the cast, from the crew. So I'm just, you know, I'm just grateful for
everything. What was it like preparing for the role of Ema?
It was a lot of work. We didn't have a lot of time for that, but it was hard work. We worked with the Quechua expert, with an anthropologist, who lived in Bolivia and in Peru, so she perfectly speaks Quechua and Aymara. We also worked with a choreographer, because, you know, the movements, they're completely different. They walk different. They speak in a different rhythm. So, like, those were, like, the main focus at the beginning. And then, you know, after a while, you're just into it. Costumes and sets, you know, they're so helpful for you to get in the mood. I'd say that was, like, the main thing, like, the Quechua and, like, the corporal thing. Yeah.
Caroline is underselling how brilliant she was. She had these epic Quechuan speeches, which she would do shivering away doing night shoots in Swansea with a kind of many goosebumps. But she did brilliantly. Really, really brilliantly.
So this is a show that is obviously fiction, but it's based in history.
Yeah, it's a historical fantasy is how we kind of mm-hmm. think of it.
So have you guys found the need to do a lot of research about the time period and stuff like that, or is it more trust in the script and go from there?
It depends on how you like to work. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you can totally rely on the script, but I mean, I feel safer if I, you know, like, do my research. I read like a shaman book, and we also learn a lot about, like, Inca history mm-hmm. and stuff like that. But you go.
I mean, the world, as from the scripts, is a whole coherent universe which has its own laws and its logics. But I mean, I research because I love it, and I know, you know, David Goyer and all the writing team have done encyclopedic amounts of research, and they glean interesting facts. And I mean, it's amazing how much of it actually is based on some historical truth. So I looked into the nature of 15th century fundamentalism, and obviously the characters that are real, such as Sixtus, who is absolutely a monster. I mean, he comes off pretty well in the show. The real Sixtus, I think, was worse. He tried to introduce satanic high mass and human sacrifice, which was nice. He was incestuous, a rapist. He tried to turn nunneries into brothels. He was an all-round good guy. But no, I mean, it's instructive, and it's really useful having flesh on the bone when you want to, you know, have something to fall back on. But if you ever talk to the writers or David, they know everything about your characters. I mean, I remember being struck before we ever started the first series, having a chat with David, and he knows where every character's arc is going to go for 3, 4, 5, 6 series if you're lucky enough to get there. So in a way, it gives you a great bedrock. It's a great foundation to kind of build characters, and I think that's why he has such a great handle on creating characters that become iconic, is because there is this dark mystery to them, but they are layered. They all have, you know, it's called Da Vinci's Demons, but so many of the characters in the show have their demons, actually, and it's what makes them these wonderful, complex, rich, living, breathing characters rather than ciphers. And I think it's one of the great joys of the show is the quality of writing for the characters.
Sure.
Was there a really interesting factoid you found out that you want to share with us during your research?
Sorry, can you read that?
Any interesting fact you want to share from the research?
I mean, there are so many interesting. I mean, one common conception in the late 15th century is that humans were in the sixth and final age of man, and the apocalypse was upon them. So if you were a religious fundamentalist, as Riario kind of is, the world is about to end. So I think it just changes the way you play in terms of the stakes of, you know, everything is about to come collapsing on your head. You better be on the right side. You better be supporting God Almighty when the final judgment calls, because it could be any day. And I think it just, you know, changes the stakes somehow.
So with the show, obviously, as we just talked about, all this light material, like, you know, religious fundamentals and the end of the world, what's the atmosphere like on set? Do you guys have time to have fun, too, or is it just all work, no play?
It's incredibly fun. It's too much fun. It's like a terribly kind of family atmosphere. It's all the scenes we have, the people are delightful. There's a lot of laughing on set, a lot of very beautiful takes ruined by people laughing on set. I'm not looking at anyone but Greg Chillin. it's lovely. It's a joy. You know, you just look forward to coming to work every day. Look forward to hanging out with your friends, and scenes evolve. That's the lovely thing with this cast is you start a scene and you rehearse it, and everyone comes up with ideas. It's a really collaborative atmosphere, and scenes just kind of evolve in the playing of it. And the scene as you rehearse it and the scene as it finishes is often entirely different. Mm-hmm. Everyone just throws in ideas, and it's it's terrific. It's a really wonderful working environment, I find. I mean, obviously, we bullied Carolina relentlessly. And,
yeah.
All right. Great. Thank you, guys.
Thank
so
you.
Much.
Guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank
Have
you
a lovely
guys.
Day.
Thank you. Likewise.